Well, we're going to tell you a harrowing story this morning, one that sparked a debate about the end of life and reproductive medicine, the beginning of life. The story began in 2008 when a woman in her mid-30s collapsed on an international flight. She had suffered a heart attack after a blood clot, and the woman was rushed to a Massachusetts hospital, Mass General, where she was diagnosed with irreversible brain damage. Her family made the painful decision to take her off life support. Now, you may have heard a story like that before. It's not terribly uncommon, but shortly after they turned off the machines, her family asked whether they could be turned back on long enough to harvest a viable egg from the dying woman's womb so that her husband could father a child with that egg. Dr. David Greer was one of the doctors on the team of physicians that treated this woman. He is the vice chairman of neurology at Yale University Medical Center, and he's on the line to talk about all of the ethical and medical implications that came along with working on the case. And we also have Dina Davis. She's a bioethicist, professor at Cleveland Marshall College of Law, and author of Genetic Dilemmas, Reproductive Technology, Parental Choices, and Children's Futures. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Dr. Greer, we're going to talk about the ethics in just a minute. Let's establish the facts of the case medically. What did you confront medically with this patient, let's say, once the decision to take her off life support had already been established?
Well, the decision was based on the fact that she had a very poor neurological prognosis, and we felt that it was an appropriate decision that was consistent with her prior wishes. But what was shocking was the fact that they wanted to put her back on. And due to the nature of this request, we had never come across something like that before, so we thought the better part of valor would be to put her back on the machines and try and see where the dust would settle, and we could try and figure out what the right thing to do was.
And the family said, the husband said, I want to have the option of fathering a child with her, a biological child, after she's gone, right?
That's correct. He wanted to explore the option of potentially having a child with one of her eggs.
And how viable was that an option from a medical standpoint, getting a viable egg out?
It turned out to be a very non-viable option, which took us off the hook ethically, in that we would have had to have done procedures which would have caused her demise during the procedure.
All right, well, hold that thought, Dr. Greer, because we're going to get back to that. Dr. Davis, there are lots and lots of cases where a pregnant woman is kept alive on life support in order to allow her to deliver a child. We've heard of cases like that before. From an ethical point of view, why is this case different?
Well, when you have a pregnant woman who unfortunately would be dying except that she's kept alive artificially for that purpose, you know a couple of things. You know that you can infer that she wanted that pregnancy to continue. She hadn't terminated that pregnancy. So it's reasonable to assume, in the absence of any other evidence, that she would have wanted to be kept alive until that baby could be born.
Right.
But in this case, you have someone, you have no evidence that she was even planning to become pregnant anytime in the near future.
In fact, she was on birth control.
Exactly. And even if you had all kinds of evidence for that, to my mind, that's a completely different question of whether she would want to be a parent after her death. That's even an oxymoron, right? To be a parent, you have to be alive. And when people say, I want to have a child, what they mean is, I want to have a child whom I will raise.
Well, Dr. Greer, I got to tell you, when I read about this story, it just put a terrible fear into me. I mean, this is exactly the kind of situation that fills me with dread. I mean, if we have a trouble in our country, even having any debate over abortion rights, the idea that somebody would be, you know, mucking around with my reproductive system after I've passed away is just horrifying to me. I don't know, imagine every woman feels the same way that I do, but I would feel like that was nobody's right to do that with my body.
I couldn't agree with you more, but we didn't know what the right thing to do was. So we always try to pursue what the family would potentially like to do in terms of what the patient would want to do. We try to use a surrogate consent in some ways, but we'd never come across a situation like this. So we know we couldn't decide after her death, so we had to keep her alive as we tried to figure this out. But I couldn't agree with you more. I think it would be outlandish in many ways to try to do something without without somebody's consent to their body.
Now, Dr. Greer, you mentioned a minute ago that you had sort of been let off the hook in this decision. Explain what you meant. What did you eventually decide to do?
Well, the obstetricians just plain and simply told us that they could not do the procedure. We would have had to stimulate her ovaries to produce an egg, and the likelihood of even producing that egg would be low, given that she'd been on birth control pills for some time. And in order to do the procedure, we'd have to lay her flat and actually beyond flat in order to try to retrieve the eggs. And given the pressure that was happening because of the brain swelling, she never would have survived that. So it just became a non-viable option. And we explained that to the family, and they understood.
So in the end, though, it was a medical viability issue that led you to decide not to do this. You were never really confronted with the ethics of doing it because medically it wasn't possible, right?
That's exactly right. But it raised such an important ethical question that that's why we wanted to bring this case to light.
And you wrote into the New England Journal of Medicine. Well, Dr. Davis, let's imagine for a moment that Dr. Greer and his team could have removed a viable egg, and it was possible. You're in the room as the ethical advisor here. What would have been your advice?
Absolutely not to do it. For one thing, the next of kin, the husband, and in his absence, the parents, had a real conflict of interest here, right? I mean, they had enormous and extremely understandable personal reasons for wanting to, you know, grab some way of thinking that this horrible, unexpected death was somehow not the end. And we can all completely understand that. But in doing so, they wanted something for themselves, right? So they really were not the best people to do the job of telling the doctors what this young woman would have wanted, because they wanted something out of it as well.
And that's what makes it different from a scenario of deciding a loved one is on life support. We decide as the family to donate the organs. We have nothing to gain, right? So that's the difference.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But, you know, we don't really, I mean, you know, Dr. Greer was obviously correct in saying that the medical facts got him and his team off the hook. But this is not all that different conceptually, forgive the pun, for than the situation that we do face, not uncommonly, where a young man who is brain dead or neurologically devastated, where the parents or the fiancé or the spouse want to harvest sperm. It's much easier to do, much greater likelihood of success, and the freezing of the sperm is also, you know, non-experimental.
So a different medical situation. Dr. Greer, before we let you go quickly, do we need new standards for this type of scenario, or is it so rare that we're okay?
I think it's very rare, but people are requesting more and more things at the end of life. And so I think it's good that we're discussing this in a public forum so that the ethicists can chime in and say what's the right course of action, because there are some really unusual things that can be requested at the end of life, and physicians and the public need guidance.
And you can read the case for yourself in the New England Journal of Medicine. Dr. David Greer, Vice Chairman of Neurology at Yale, and Dina Davis, Professor at Cleveland Marshall College and author of Genetic Dilemmas, Reproductive Technology, Parental Choices, and Children's Futures. What's your take on this? 8778 My Take is the number, or post at thetakeaway.org. Thank you both.
I bet a lot of people have comments on this. On Monday, we're going to continue our series DIY Checkup. We'll talk about more ways you can take charge of your own health, and we're going to focus on sleep, which is something I could really use right now. Start the conversation by telling us about your sleep habits and how they affect you. Tyrone in Baltimore has only been getting 4 hours since April, but he says he's been dealing with trying to pay for school, family issues, and economic issues, and gaining real sleep is hella rare.
Hella rare.
Says. Give us your take at 8778 My Take. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm Todd Zwillick. We don't sleep at the Takeaway. I'm in for John Hockenberry.